Track one, truths, damn truths, and statistics. Well, the number that we're going to talk about right now, and we are going to talk about a number, the number is how many civilians have died as a result of the war. Fact is, nobody is even pretending to have an accurate count. The Iraqi Ministry of Health for a while, early on in the war, was compiling morgue figures from across the country and making them public each week, but that practice was stopped. There's also a privately run nonprofit website called IraqBodyCount.net, which keeps a running tally of confirmed deaths in Iraq. That's as opposed to an estimate of all the deaths in the country. And there have been two studies published in the British medical journal The Lancet. One of the studies came out just a few weeks ago. The other came out 2 years ago. And both of these studies arrived at casualty numbers that are so high that they shocked many people. Right now in this first act, we're going to return to a story that one of our producers, Alex Bloomberg, did for our show a year ago about that first Lancet study. Later in the show, in Act 3, we're going to look at the study that just came out. Anyway, here's Alex.
Everyone will tell you, counting casualties in wartime is hard. First of all, you need to do something called a large-scale mortality survey. And second of all, you need to do it in the middle of a war zone. The first attempt ever made in Iraq was this Johns Hopkins University study, published in The Lancet, a British medical journal, in late October 2004, a couple of days before the U.S. presidential election. It concluded that probably 100,000 Iraqis died as a result of the war. This figure was astonishingly high, 10 times higher than any of the casualty estimates at the time. Because of this, and because the study itself got almost no traction in the press, I remember thinking at the time it came out that it was probably bogus and slanted. I'm guessing a lot of people, if they heard about the study at all, felt the way I did. But recently, in trying to find out how many Iraqis have died in the war, I've learned more about the Lancet study. And the more I learned about it, and the remarkable story of how it was done, the more likely it seems that the 100,000 figure is actually the best estimate. And possibly, the man with whom he'd be working for the next month. His name was Riyad Lafta, and he was a doctor of community medicine at Al-Mustansiriya University in Baghdad. Riyad had hired a team of researchers, mostly doctors from his university, all of them native Iraqis, but fluent in English. And let's pause here a moment to talk about their methodology, because when the study came out later, a lot of people wanted to believe that it was flawed or biased. In fact, the survey team used a standard methodology for measuring health and mortality over a geographic area. It's called a cluster sample survey, and it works like this. Using the most recent census figures available in Iraq, the team made what was essentially a map of the population. They then used a random number generator to pick 33 points on that map. Baghdad was the biggest population center, so it got several points by itself. But the other points were spread all over the country, from the Kurdish north to the Shiite south, from small towns to big cities. Once they'd picked a town, though, the team still had to figure out who to interview there. Here again, they worked hard to leave everything to chance. Using GPS units, they would drive around the outskirts of the town and store the coordinates, creating a rough outline of the town border. They would then generate a random point within that border, drive to it, and interview the 30 nearest households. It was such a commitment to random sampling that the first few times the team did it, even the researchers Les and Riyad were working with found it obsessive.
It was very annoying to them, because here they are in the car, they're out, they're feeling like they're at risk, and they'd be driving around for a long time to get to the extremes of a city and draw their map before they interviewed the first house. They're like driving around and not getting any work done, they felt.
And this is all just to make it as scientifically valid as possible, right?
Like this is a way of picking houses without any sort of preference for safe neighborhoods, dangerous neighborhoods, near the highway, far from the highway. It was a way of sort of transcending human laziness so that, in essence, every household in Iraq had an equal chance we would visit them. And that is, in essence, the definition of random.
The survey went smoothly, at least for the first couple of days. People, it turned out, were much more willing to answer questions, even to provide death certificates as verification, than the researchers had initially thought they'd be. In fact, the trouble, when it came from Les himself.
Must be about the fifth day I was out with them, the eighth cluster I attended. I and two of the interviewers were up in a town to the north called Balad. And there was a huge picture of the cleric Sadr as he rolled into Balad. So clearly it was an anti-coalition city in a big way.
Sadr of Sadr militia.
Of the Sadr militia, that's right. And as fate would have it... The first or the second door they knocked on was the governor's house. And so somebody calls the police.
Les watched from the car as the police took the two researchers, both doctors, one a dignified man in his 50s and the other a single mother, and drove them away. He was terrified that somehow the police would find out that they were working with him, an American. But he could do nothing but sit in the parked car and hope no one discovered him.
I had done everything I could to be invisible. I wore, like, boring Iraqi clothing. I had dyed my hair black. I had grown a beard so I would look right, but it still didn't look right. They had made up fake business card that said, Dr. Abdul Salam from, that I was from Bosnia, because that would explain me being blue-eyed, non-Arabic speaking, but I could still be a Muslim and that would make me okay.
Oh.
And I was just so worried that us sitting there for an exorbitant length of time would draw attention that I put the back of the passenger seat down and I sort of laid on my side to pretend I was asleep so I wouldn't have to speak to anyone if anyone came to the window of the car. Mm-hmm. And I had probably been lying on my side for about, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. And these two little kids, they might have been 10, they came up to the window beside where I was. They stuck their head in the car. They looked around, and I'm pretending to be asleep. And they said to me in English, "Hello, mister." And, you know, even with my eyes closed, pretending to be asleep, there's just no way I could pretend I was an Iraqi, and there was no way around it. So that was a pretty just horrifying experience all around. And I'm wondering, have I gotten these two lovely interviewers arrested or killed? And after an hour or a little more, a car brought back the two interviewers. And they went right back to work. They didn't come to the car. They didn't look at us. They didn't acknowledge us. They just went right back to work and finished out the 30 houses randomly picked in that neighborhood, and off we went. But after that day, no interviewer ever spoke to me again. Not in person.
Riad and Les decided that for everyone's safety, he should lay as low as possible. So for the next 16 days straight, he didn't leave his hotel. To pass the time, he crunched the numbers that the survey teams were calling into him every night. The surveyors were getting basically two pieces of information from each household. How many people in that household had died in the 14 months before the invasion, and of what and when? And how many had died in the 17 months after the invasion, and of what and when? By the time the teams had completed their 32nd out of 33 clusters, over 900 households and over 7,000 people, the results were pretty shocking. The death rate itself had gone up about 60%. A large increase, but one that Les had expected from his other surveys. The shocker was how people were dying. For the first time in any of his surveys, the leading cause of death wasn't disease, it was bombs and bullets. In the 32 of the 33 clusters sampled, 21 people died of violence. That's compared to just one violent death in the period before the war. Of those 21, two people died in firefights where it was unclear where the bullet came from. Three were killed by insurgents or Saddam loyalists. Seven died from criminal violence, carjackings, revenge killings, that sort of thing. And the biggest number, 9, were killed by the American-led coalition.
I should mention that only 3 of them involved guys with guns. All the rest were helicopter gunships and bombs from planes. So it's not about individual soldiers doing bad things. In fact, 2 of those 3 cases when soldiers shot civilians with their guns, they actually went to the houses of the decedents and apologized to the families. So, you know, there's no evidence here of soldiers running amok. There's evidence here of a style of engagement that probably has relied very heavily on air power that has resulted in a lot of civilian deaths. I was at a presentation last November, and a Pentagon spokesperson said that they've dropped about 50,000 bombs in Iraq. 50,000 bombs! I mean, very, very small fraction of them would need to miss their target or be based on bad information to explain 100,000 civilian deaths.
At the end of 3 weeks, there was only one more cluster to survey. The team had saved it for the end because it was the most dangerous one, Fallujah. Remember, this is September 2004. Insurgents control the city, and it's basically under siege from the coalition. They're shelling it regularly.
It just seems crazy to go there. And I said to Riad, Riad, we have been to 32 of our 33 picked neighborhoods. We actually only thought in the end we would get to 30. We had aimed for 30 and picked 33 with the thought that 10% of places would be too unstable for us to get to. Mm-hmm. So we've done better than we expected. We have a terrible story to tell. The mortality is way up. Whatever you find in Fallujah is not going to change the story. Think of what we're going to gain. We're going to gain nothing. Mm-hmm. And he said, God picked those random locations. God wants me to do this work. I must do this. And we went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I was brought up Catholic. And I had never really thought about it or understood it until that moment in time. But in my head, I actually sort of build up a weight. What's the likelihood of something bad going to happen to these guys? And how bad is that? And what's the likelihood of something good coming from what they do? And how good is that? And I sort of put a weight on each of them. And as I spoke with Riyad, he actually did not have the capacity to do that. Because for him, doing God's will and this work were inseparable. He couldn't like separate out risk, because that was separating out sort of faith. The more we spoke, the more I understood that, like, on some very, very fundamental level, that we couldn't communicate with each other about our motives here. And in the end, he went.
Only one other interviewer agreed to go to Fallujah with Riyad, a doctor who had relatives there he wanted to check up on. Their car was stopped 3 times on the way into the city. Heading to their random spot, they saw devastation everywhere. Houses were bombed, rubble lay in the streets. The block they stopped on was no different. They had to visit 52 households to get the requisite number of interviews. 23 homes were either temporarily or permanently abandoned. Neighbors said that in the abandoned houses, most people had died, but this data couldn't be substantiated, so it wasn't even included in the survey results. In the 30 households they did survey, there were 53 deaths. 52 of these were violent deaths, all but one caused by coalition weapons. 24 of the people killed by coalition bombs and bullets were children under 12 years old. And with that, the survey was over.
5 days and counting. Tonight, the newest polls, the latest trends, and breaking developments from the campaign trail on America's News Live.
This is Fox Evening News, October 28, 2004. On the day the results of Les's survey, that just shy of 100,000 Iraqis had died as a result of the war, were released. Les had not even considered the Fallujah data in coming up with this number. Fallujah had so many deaths, it was too much of a statistical outlier to even include. Fox never mentioned the study, neither did ABC or CBS. The only national network that carried the story was NBC, for 21 seconds.
Tom, thanks. And we begin here with Iraq Watch tonight and one measure of the high cost of war. A new study from Johns Hopkins University estimates that 100,000 Iraqi civilians have died since the start of the war, the majority as a result of U.S. airstrikes. This is a much larger figure than some previous estimates. The Pentagon had no comment on the number, but said it had taken great care to prevent civilian deaths.
And there is Morning Edition and All Things Considered on NPR devoted 45 seconds to the story, and it didn't make the front page of The New York Times, The Washington Post, or any national newspaper. The Iraq study had provided information about the war that up until that point no one had been able to provide. The number it gave was much higher than anyone would have expected. It was just as accurate as Les's previous studies in Africa that he'd done using the exact same methods and which were widely reported in the press and quoted by lawmakers. His Congo study was page one in The New York Times. The only differences with this study were that he'd risked his life to do it, and it was about Iraq, which, if anything, should have made it more interesting to the media. Talking to people in the military, off the record, I heard a couple of arguments against counting civilian deaths. First, they say, it's not the military's job. If what you're trying to do is win a battle, it could be a dangerous and, in the long run, counterproductive distraction to worry about counting all the civilians you accidentally kill along the way. Second, and perhaps more persuasively, they say no one would believe them anyway. Just ask Les Roberts. Even though Les's study didn't get much mainstream attention, it did provoke, like so many things these days, a bitter debate on the internet. The attacks came mainly, though not exclusively, from right-wing blogs. Several charges leveled at the study were simply untrue and seemed designed to willfully muddy the waters. For example, there was a claim repeatedly made, both in the press and online, that the data weren't random because the researchers had been blocked from going certain places or had decided against certain places because it was too dangerous. This is simply false. A couple people suggested that the researchers had gone to Fallujah on purpose to boost their numbers, even though exactly the opposite was true. Less had wanted to skip Fallujah altogether, and they hadn't even included the data in their final casualty estimate. Several objections had merit, though. First of all, the study makes no distinction between combatants and civilians. Less actually acknowledged this in the study itself, and went to great lengths not to claim, as others did on his behalf, that the study was a measure of civilian mortality. Certainly, some of the people the coalition killed, they intended to kill. But half of all the casualties were women and children, so even in the unlikely event that 50% of the men who died were actually fighting us, it's still a large number of innocents. The critique that got most traction on the internet, though, has to do with something called the confidence interval. Let's take an election poll as an example. If candidate X is projected to receive 55% of the vote, what that really means is that he's projected to receive some percentage within two numbers, let's say 52 and 58%. That range is called the confidence interval. The confidence interval in Less's survey was very wide, between 8,000 and 194,000. It was this wide for a lot of reasons, but mainly because the sample was relatively small relative to the population, and because violent death, unlike death due to malaria or diarrhea, isn't very uniformly distributed. So you have Kurdish areas, where mortality actually went down during the war, versus Fallujah, which averaged almost two violent deaths per household. Such a wide confidence interval means that, statistically speaking, Less's estimate of 100,000 dead isn't very precise. The number could be thousands or tens of thousands smaller, or equally likely, bigger. But a lot of people made wrong conclusions from the wide confidence interval. They interpreted it to mean it was just as likely that 8,000 people had died as it was that 100,000 had. One of the most surprising things Less discovered in Iraq is that despite what everyone says about the difficulty of counting civilian casualties during wartime, it's actually not that hard. The survey teams got participation rates that most American pollsters would kill for. Only 5 of the 988 households the team surveyed refused to answer the questions. And people were able to provide death certificates over 80% of the time. And that confidence interval? Less is sure that based on the results of the first survey, and with a little more money, remember this whole thing cost only $40,000, he could design a follow-up survey that would narrow that interval way down. We can count some data.
Act 3, the war this time. So a couple weeks ago, The Lancet published another study of deaths in Iraq by the same research team who did the earlier study. This time, the number of deaths that they came up with was seen as even more astounding than the first study's number. Over 650,000 extra deaths because of the war, 601,000 of those due to violence. The second study got slightly more coverage than the first study. A reporter even asked President Bush about it. Our producer, Alex Bloomberg, examined the debate over this new study, and he called various statisticians and epidemiologists who looked at the study.
Well, if anything, the methodology is sounder in this study than it was in the last study. A lot of the critiques that were leveled at the last study could not be leveled at this study.
For instance,
one of the biggest critiques of the last study was that it had a very wide confidence interval. And in this study, the confidence interval is much narrower because they went to a lot more places. In this survey, they went to 1,850 households total. And the first study, they went to only 988 households.
So of the critiques that you've seen of the study, are there criticisms of this study or questions about this study that seem particularly compelling, though?
I mean, everybody I talked to said that if you're doing this in a lab, you would do it differently. But almost everybody agreed that given that they were doing this in a war zone, the methodology was as sound as it could possibly be. And it's hard to imagine that sort of any sort of like bias that crept into the methodology could have accounted for a several hundred thousand person overcount. But there's just the fact of the number is so shocking to people who know about this stuff that that's been the basis of criticism. And from groups that are you would think would be sort of aligned with the Lancet's results. Hmm. In other words, this group called Iraq Body Count. This is a group that's basically trying to do the same thing that these researchers are doing. Since the beginning of the war, they've been documenting every news report of where civilians are reported killed, and they've been keeping a running tally. And then as the war progressed and as they got more sophisticated, they started incorporating Baghdad morgue data into their tallies, and they've also started keeping hospital records. And the number they have on their website is around 50,000 civilians dead.
That's their computation based on these methods.
Based on these methods, right, mm-hmm. Exactly, which is less than a tenth of what this Lancet survey came up with. And they admit that they're that they're doing an undercount. They admit that not every death is reported in the press and that there's problems with the morgue reporting. And so they know that they're under, but they don't think they're under by this much. So they came out with a detailed response on their website. And it's very compelling to look at.
For instance?
So one of the things that they do is they dig into the data. So they sort of go into the Lancet study and they say, on average, in the first half of 2006, according to the Lancet, 1,000 Iraqis have been violently killed every single day, with less than a tenth of them being noticed by any public surveillance mechanisms.
They're not showing up in the morgue. They're not showing up in the press. Nothing.
They're not showing up in the morgue, or they're not being reported by the morgue. Mm-hmm. They're not being reported by the Ministry of Health. They're not being documented in press accounts.
Right.
And then they sort of go on further because the Lancet breaks down how people die of gunshot wounds, which they say is that's very likely. You know, it's very possible that you could miss a lot of the gunshot wounds. If somebody's being killed in execution style and dumped in a river somewhere, maybe they never show up. But there's a certain percentage who are dying of car bombs. And what they say is car bombs, people notice, you know, and that gets reported in the press. But even the according to Lancet figures, if you extrapolate, even the car bomb figures aren't showing up.
In other words, if the Lancet study is right, we should be seeing a lot more car bombs in the news, and we're just not.
And we're just not, right. And so that's one thing. And then the second thing they say is that there should be a lot more wounded people because in modern wars, for every person that's killed, there's at least three that are wounded seriously.
That's kind of a general rule of thumb.
That's a general rule of thumb based on sort of like lots of studies of wars.
Mm-hmm.
So for every death, so if there's 600,000 deaths, there should be some much greater number of wounded people who are showing up. And they do some sort of like rough calculations and they conclude that conservatively, if there are 600,000 people being killed by violence, there should be at least 800,000 people seriously wounded. But if you look at the hospital records all across Iraq, you don't see 800,000 people as having been treated for shrapnel wounds and, you know, like legs getting blown off and all the things that you would expect to find for this level of violence.
And did anybody who you talked to have any explanation for how these numbers could be so high?
Well, there's two possibilities. One is that Iraq body count has more faith in the reporting mechanisms currently existing in Iraq than they should. And that, in fact, even though it's hard to believe that 800,000 people are showing up in hospitals and that's not getting documented, it might be. The other possibility is that the data is wrong. Either people lied to them and told them that people in their household had died and then somehow fabricated death certificates to support that.
Mm-hmm.
That seems impossible because they were randomly selected, so it's impossible that that happened. Or the surveyors themselves concocted data, said that people died in these households when in fact they hadn't. I don't think that happened. I mean, I think that would be it would just be such a huge conspiracy and such a cover-up and such a risky thing for all these people to do because, you know, Les was involved. Les, the guy in the story, was involved in both of these studies, and he did go there and he did risk his life.
Right. If you're going to make up stuff, why go door-to-door in dangerous areas? Why not just sit in your office and make up stuff? And you're going to go door-to-door, why not just get the data?
Right. And if you're going to make up stuff, why make up a number that even the people who are on your alleged side are going to argue with you about? Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. If he was going to fake the data, he would have said there was 300,000 dead. And then, you know, everybody would have been joining in and saying this is a horrible thing. And instead, he comes up with this much larger number. It just doesn't make any sense.
So if you're going to lie, do a better job.